will go on with Simon, who will present the results of the Eurotrainer survey conducted together with Wolfgang Wittig. Simon will talk to us about the results.
Well, we have been, as I was saying this morning in the introduction, there is a number of activities that this network is undertaking, and the e-conference is one of those strand of activities, and the other strand of activities started off with a survey among practitioners, which we had been implementing we started in May, and we've letting it continue over the summer just until 2 weeks ago, actually. So we just want to present some of those very recent results of an online survey that we conducted with the help of the network partners in quite a number of countries. And it was targeted towards practitioners, that is, people who actually work as vet trainers, or some of them also worked as vet teachers in some countries, those who are more involved in IVET. I just start with the first slide then. Now, some more issues on the background of the survey. As I was saying, it was targeted towards training practitioners, and it formed part as one activity of the overall network activities, and was conducted during the last 8 months or so. We produced a questionnaire that was in a way informed by and drawn from the experiences of the Eurotrainer survey that was carried out in 2007, which was targeted towards multipliers. So we adjusted this questionnaire. We shortened it considerably because we were thinking that practitioners don't have so much time to answer questionnaires. And we translated it into 18 European languages and put it online. Actually, it was available on the network's platform. So we have now we ended the data collection on the 27th of October, which effectively is just was just last Monday. And just for those people who do not know the questionnaire, most of the answers were multiple answers. So the percentages that are in the next charts refer to responses unless stated otherwise. Okay, the overall sample consisted of 738 field questionnaires, and most people used the online version. Maybe almost 90%. So apparently the online had a very good positive feedback and positive responses. And we totaled it up to 28 European countries. That means that while we had the questionnaire in 18 languages, people from even more countries were involved in the questionnaire using versions that did not just refer to their own national language. So some people, for example, filled the English questionnaire. Not all of them were from the UK. Now, the largest group of respondents came from Spain, where we had over 100 responses, actually, and then also very high response rates from Austria and Greece. Most of the training practitioners who responded work in public institutions and private companies. So those two groups were like represented by together about 70%. And most respondents worked in initial vocational education and training, in continuing vocational education and training, and in adult education. And the next charts kind of document those statements. If you can go on to the next slide. So here you can see the countries and the numbers of actual responses. So this is not a percentage, it's the actual number. So it is Spain, Greek, and Austria. But also Italy had 45 responses, the Netherlands 39, Estonia 47, Germany 41. So this is the distribution, and then there were a few countries which had very few responses, like Romania. Is this Romania? Two responses from Romania, and this is interesting because we don't have we didn't target Romanian. So these might be people who answered the questionnaire in English, or yeah, probably in English, and who probably came across the questionnaire by chance. Next slide, please. Here you can see where the people who answered the questionnaires come from in which kind of institutions they work. We had about a third coming from private companies, just a little bit over a third working in public institutions, 13% working for private training providers, about 8% who were self-employed, and 8% others. Next slide, please. What types and of education and training are you involved in? This was one key question where we were trying to differentiate also the different types of trainers that exist. We had about a fourth that worked predominantly in initial vocational training. And as I was saying, in some countries, and this depends on the structure of the vocational education and training system, those were also VET teachers. Just almost about the same worked in continuing vocational training, almost 20% in adult education, 13% represented people who train trainers, and another 13% who worked in counseling and providing training guidance. So it's a fairly well-distributed sample, I would say, that we have good representation of trainers from all different kinds of activities. Next slide, please. Regarding the occupational profile and working conditions, we found that trainers still show a fairly traditional work profile of training, particularly as concerns their training-related tasks and methods they apply. In terms of corporation structures, the training practitioners we had in our sample mostly cooperated with colleagues from their own institutions. And most of the respondents' work was subject to evaluation, mostly carried out by their employers and the learners. Next slide, please. This was one of the key questions. What are the typical training-related tasks that form part of your work as a trainer? And here we can see that the highest responses yielded the actual delivery of training. And then it's fairly broadly spread out over organizing and designing training courses, evaluating and assessment of training outcomes and results. Number four is the planning and evaluation of the quality and or costs of training, recruitment, selection of staff, counseling functions, mentoring, implementation of innovation in training and pedagogies, and establishing cooperation with other vocational training institutes. So we will now, probably the next step, try to look at if there is a particular correlation between tasks and the type of trainer. For example, if those trainers in IVET are more involved in counseling than, for example, the trainers working in CVET, those things. So what you see now, because it has just been closing last week, is a fairly simple descriptive analysis. Next slide, please. Concerning the most common training methods, we wanted to find out whether trainers use more, let's say, innovative training methods like e-learning and more on innovation, or if they more focus on textbooks and, let's say, front teaching. And here we had actually the highest, well, those are fairly equal. It's still a high number, we thought, of classroom-based teaching. But then also work-based learning plays an important role. Demonstration imitation is third, project-based learning, e-learning is about 10%. So if you combine, let's say, the experimenting, self-organized learning and e-learning, it is still less, very much less important than if you combine classroom-based teaching, textbooks, and demonstration imitation, which we would consider the more traditional types of teaching. Next slide, please. Qualification and continuing learning of trainers. The majority of the respondents had a formal qualification as a trainer. About three quarter of the respondents. And in IVET, most trainers had a qualification at the skilled workers level. About two-thirds of respondents felt that their skills and competences were well matched to their tasks. And here we also found that a high percentage regularly updates their knowledge and skills, so continuing learning apparently plays a key role. Individual self-study is the most important source of learning, and continuing learning activities concentrate mainly on technical or subject-specific competences. Next slide, please. So here we find a fairly positive judgment on the question of how trainers feel they are prepared to undertake their tasks in terms of having the right skills and competences. So two-thirds said it's well matched, and another 30% said that it's at least partly matched. Next slide, please. Apparently, also trainers engage quite regularly in continuing learning. And this is interesting because this is one question that the experts and multipliers did not know. They could not answer this question. And that was how many hours per month do you actually dedicate to continuing learning related to your work as a trainer? So that would be learning that they can actually use in their daily work. And over 40% stated that it's more than 8 hours per month. I would say that the engagement in continuing learning is fairly high. Next slide, please. What sources of learning do you use for your own professional development? Apparently, individual self-study was just about over 20% is fairly high. E-learning with 13%. Work experience. I think this relates to what we've heard this morning, that actually the learning while working plays a key role. And formal training courses are still equally important than work-based learning. So apparently it's a combination. And learning in groups or team, I would say, is still a bit underdeveloped. Next slide, please. What is the main focus of your continuing learning? We had a range from technical, subject-specific competences, pedagogical skills, social competences, management, monitoring, evaluation, information technologies, and language skills. So it goes, well, you could say that probably the first four, they are all important, but the technical subject-specific competence is most important. And this is interesting because when we had the questionnaire with the multipliers, the social and pedagogical competences were very high, yielded higher actually. So, but you could also say that they're fairly engaged in the whole range of competences in their continuing learning. Next slide, please. Motivation and professional identity, and I think we're now coming to the end of the presentation. We found that those who rely on formal training opportunities and who are motivated by economic benefits are less active in continuing learning. Professional development of training practitioners is predominantly driven by personal interest and intrinsic motivation rather than career or economic incentives or benefits. The majority of respondents has a positive attitude towards their profession, and the decision to become a trainer is in the first place motivated by personal interest. Next slide, please. Then we were asking, why do people not update their knowledge and skills? What are the obstacles? And apparently that there are no adequate training opportunities and no incentives are the main obstacles for trainers. Incentives, we refer to benefits in terms of higher status or career, broadening opportunities or remuneration. Also, some stated that they were not supported by their employers. And some did not have access to training programs. And recognition also is an issue. Next, please. What do you see as the benefits of engaging in continuing learning? Now, this very much confirms what also the other study revealed, that personal development and to be a better trainer are the most important drivers for continuing learning as compared to salary or career opportunities, for example, which play only a minor role. Next slide, please. This corresponds with the question, why do people, what is the motivating factor for updating the knowledge and skills? And about two-thirds say that it's mainly self-initiated. Very little, employer directing. And then we also thought that maybe some people need to update their knowledge and skills because of some legal requirements or statutory obligations. But apparently self-initiation is the key driver here. Next slide. Okay. Most people think that working as a trainer is attractive. Next slide. What are the main reasons why I decided to become a trainer? Now here again we find personal interest is the most important factor. And broadening skills and redirecting the daily job routine. I would say this is probably mainly true for trainers and companies, but this needs to be verified. So I think what we can see from this very short assessment is that the training profession and deciding to become a trainer and engage in continuing learning to, let's say, stay on top of what is required of a trainer is a much self-driven process motivated by personal interest. And self-study apparently plays a key role in this process. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Simone. I just I think that maybe we should have for a few minutes of discussion if we don't want to run out of time for our last speech. And if I can just take up 1 minute to say that I'm very proud for the Greek specimen, but if I am to account for that, I wanted to make a guess and say that it was probably answered mostly by teachers in vocational education and training institutes, and this is my guess because especially looking at what they answered in the formal qualification, most of them said that they had a formal qualification as a trainer. And if we see that trainers in companies, for example, is a big area in Greece, my guess is that it was maybe answered by teachers. If I'm just about to say something about our big specimen, that's it. And now, if anybody has any questions to ask?
I think I like very much the presentation, and I think most of the results show what I have said before. So people don't see themselves, or the people see themselves as a classical trainer, not the facilitator of learning of others, and that I think is the thing we should reflect on.
Yes, anybody has any comment on what Eduardo said or what Simon and Sofian said to us about the results of your trainer study? survey, sorry. Graham, I don't know if you wanted to ask something because I saw that you had a comment in the chat room.
It's really a question I have about methodology. Because it seems to me that some of the questions, I mean, we're saying to trainers, which methods do you use? Is it classroom learning? Is it experimentation? Is it this? Is it that? Now, one of the issues is, of course, I as a trainer myself, not much these days, but I used to work main job as a trainer, I would use lots of experiential learning and all kinds of different forms of learning. But I was also working in a training room whilst I was doing them. So they weren't counterposed to each other. So I just wonder about how these stats have been collected in that respect.
Yes, I mean, we were giving multiple options. I think your question, when we now correlate these answers with, for example, the types of trainers, it might be that we find out that the trainers who work in IVET use mostly textbook learning, and trainers who work in continuing training mostly use experimenting. That would then give us a clearer picture. At the moment, as it stands, it can actually be that one trainer is just using all the different methods. But still, there's a tendency. I mean, still the tendency was that the traditional textbook classroom teaching, I think, was still fairly high. Like it was dominating.
Okay, and I just wanted to ask Eric if you wanted to comment on what I see in the chat room. Do you want to comment on theory and practice in this case? Do you want to say something?
Well, what I said in the chat room was a reaction to what Edward said, the data confirm, in a sense, that training has a very traditional image in practice, and there are two possibilities: whether practice lags behind theory, or theory might be wrong. That's the sense of my comment.
For those interested, I mean, we will produce, we would have a more in-depth analysis of these data, which I think with 730 respondents is a fairly large database, and we will publish it as a working paper, which we will discuss with within the network, and probably also on a discussion forum that we will soon start on our platform, and you are all invited to engage in this discussion, how we can use these information and if they need to be contextualized further.
Okay, thank you, Simone, very much, and thank you, Wolfgang, also, and to everybody who commented on the speech.